So as I mentioned, I'm Bryce. I work at Now NVIDIA on this library here. Come talk to me about CUDA stuff later, if you feel so inclined. And today I'm going to be talking about C++ 17, or as my little punchline here says, an introduction to C++ 17 via inspiring examples. So this talk I've given a few times before in different forms, and a number of people have contributed in material in some way, so this whole list of names here. And you can find the talk right now, if you'd like, at this URL. It uses this weird bundle of JavaScript called reveal.js, which is kind of nice. It's my first time using this for one of these talks. So these are the 26 features we're going to be talking about today. So this is a two-part talk, so this first one-hour session will hopefully cover all of the language changes, and then the second one-hour session we will cover these library changes right here. And the ones that are underlined are sort of those that I think of as more high impact, whereas the ones that aren't underlined are sort of features that are there and that are nice, but are maybe not as widely useful. So let's start off by talking about the destructuring problem. So that's we have some .3D class, and how do we assign convenient names to the components of this class? So that's the destructuring problem. So for example, like we have this here, and we want to do something like this. And there's a bunch of different sort of caveats here. Like, we may want those names to have reference semantics instead of value semantics. Now, you can sort of kind of do this with tuples in C++ 11, using std tie, which some of you may be familiar with. And there's kind of a number of problems with this, because the variable names need to be separately declared before they're bound here. So I've got to my double XYZ declaration, and then I tie them down on the next line there. So for example, you'd not get any warning if you had repeated names here, like I've accidentally written std tie y of z, when I really meant to tie x, y, and z. And if I wanted to bind by reference, you can't really do this because I can't have uninitialized references. And you also, if you wanted to capture into const variables, so to have double const here, again, you can't have an uninitialized const. So this doesn't really work in the way that we would intend it to. More generally, this pattern won't work with any types that are not default constructible, because again, they have to be separately declared before you tie into them. And also, of course, tie will not work with your structs or things like std array that you might also want to be destructurable. So in C++ 17, we have a new language feature called structured bindings, and it allows you to take things that are destructurable, so something like my .3D class, or a tuple, or an array, and create variables that represent the components of that object and give them convenient names. So the syntax is auto, and then you have square brackets and a list of names, and then the destructurable object on the right-hand side of the assignment. So when I say destructurable, the requirements is that either all the non-static data members of the class must be public, direct members of the type, or members of the same public base class of the type, and cannot be anonymous unions, or for any other types, so something that's like a class that has private data, you can give it a .get method, or you can have a get global function that will match for that class by ADL. And then you also have to specialize these other two customization points, tuple size and tuple element. So in the standard library, there's, I believe, only these three types that meet these requirements, so std array, std tuple, and std pair. And the auto in this syntax, it uses the regular auto deduction rules, so like you can write like auto const or auto ref or auto ref. And that just sort of works in the same way that auto does today. So there's no real caveats there. So this can be particularly useful when dealing with things like std map, which gives you back a pair, which is kind of annoying to work with. So this is right here. This may be a little hard to read, but I've got a range-based for where I have auto ampersand, ampersand, and then key value, and then the map on the right here. So I don't have to deal with any of pairs ugliness, which is quite nice. And here's a, were these in the wrong order? Oh no, this is a before and after. So this is the next feature I'm gonna talk about, which is also sort of about std map. This example, at least. So we often end up introducing variables right before an if, even if we're gonna use the variable only within that if statement, because the if condition uses the variable. So like right here, I've introduced this auto it in the outside scope, but I'm only gonna use it within this within the if condition and within the statement associated with the if condition. Now in C++ 17, we've added a new feature called selection statements with initializers. So it's sort of similar to the syntax that you're familiar with for for statements. So you can do if an initialization statement and then semicolon the if condition. So I can take that iterator that I created here and I can just initialize it right here and then it will be available in this scope right here. So the syntax looks like this. So if, init, condition, then you have your two statements here. And what it's equivalent to is putting that init into a, like right before the if statement in a new scope. So this is just like a little syntax hack. One thing to keep in mind here is that the variables in the initializer are in scope for all possible branches following the initializer. So in this example here, I have an if init condition statement here where I introduce x. So x is in scope here. Then I have this else if where I introduce y. And both x and y are in scope here. And then in the last else here, both x and y are in scope. So it's a little unintuitive, but like if you expand out this, you can see why it works like this. So this feature can be very useful when dealing with locks. Like suppose I'm trying to implement this class string pool, which is supposed to be a thread safe sort of like cache of just strings that have memory associated with them so that we don't have to go and allocate new memory. So we want to implement the pop method for this string pool. And so we implement it like this. So first we have a default constructed string here, then we go and try to acquire the mutex, and if the pool is empty, or if the pool is not empty, we go and swap the last string in the pool with this temporary string we've created, and then once we are outside of this if statement, we go and check if the capacity of the string is smaller than the capacity that we've requested. And if we do, we go and ask the string that we just got to reserve a new one. So if we didn't find a string here, this reserves the desired capacity, and then we return here. So there's a bug here, of course, or sort of a performance bug, in that we are holding this lock while we're doing the reserve here. And that's not good, because that might be allocating memory. You don't want to hold a lock while you're allocating memory. So to fix this, you would put a scope around this lock guard and this if statement here so that the lock is released before you reach this branch in the possible reserve right here. But it's kind of ugly because you have to introduce, you know, the extra squiggly brackets. I really don't like having more squiggly brackets than I need in my code. It makes it harder to understand. So with this new syntax, you can just put the lock guard right in that if statement here, and the scope of the lock guard is just right here, and it'll be destroyed right here in the lock list. And the last one of these, this I think combines very nicely with structured bindings when you're working with maps. So like right here, I've got this in place or throw function, so I want to try to put something into this set, and if it's already in the set, then I'm going to throw, and otherwise I just want to put it in there. And so I have this if, and then a structured binding right here. So that introduces that for the scope here, and then we would throw if, you know, based on whatever the key is, we could create an exception, say, hey, this existing key was in the set that you just tried to insert into. So this syntax is also there for switch, so you can do switch init condition, and it's sort of the same mapping right here. And I don't really have an example for this one. This one's a little bit less frequently used. It was difficult to come up with a good example for this, but it is there if you need it. All right, so next I want to talk about if constexpr. So before C++ 17, when processing variadic parameter packs, we would often implement an interface like this where I want to say, hey, here's a, you know, a parameter pack of things I'd like you to print. And we would implement this by having a base case and then a recursive case here. So anybody who's done any amount of programming with variadic parameter packs is probably familiar with this pattern. In C++ 17, we can write this in just one overload using if constexpr. So we don't have to worry about the base case of the recursion, because what if constexpr does here is if this condition's not true, then this statement is it needs to parse, but it is not instantiated. So the fact that there is that when you're on the last argument, the last element here, that there's no function overload that matches here is fine, because this is never instantiated. Now, if you didn't have the if constexpr here, you would be trying to call print with zero arguments when this parameter pack is empty and there's not an overload for that, and so you'd get a compile error. But with if constexpr, you don't get the compile error because it's never instantiated. So the syntax is this. And at some points in time, this has been called constexpr if, because the syntax used to be the other way around, but that got complicated because then you needed to have additional constexprs when you wrote else branches. So it's a little unintuitive if you read some of the early papers about this feature, and some people still call it constexpr if, but you write it if constexpr. So the condition must, of course, be a constexpr expression, and the statements are discarded if the branch is not taken. So they can use variables that are declared but not defined, and discarded templates, discarded statements and templates are not instantiated. So, yeah, so we already talked about this. Yep. So this can be used to replace Sphene in a number of places. So if you're writing make unique before C++ 11, you would need to use Sphene because you need to handle two cases, one where the type T is constructible, and you're going to use, do new T parentheses, the list of arguments. But if it's not constructible, you need to do brace init. And so you just have this Sphene condition here, constructible, not constructible. Now in C++ 17, you can just use if constexpr here. And if it's constructible, only this statement will be instantiated. If it's not, then only this one will be instantiated. And you can do some more advanced things with this, like if you're familiar with, I'm sure, advance from the standard library. So it takes an iterator and advances it some number of elements. And usually this is implemented with tag dispatching. So there's different implementations that you'd want based on, depending on the type of iterator that you have. And so you go and figure out what is the iterator category of the iterator I've been given. And then I'll go call this other function which with an instance of this iterator category type, and overload resolution will point me to the correct implementation. In C++ 17, we can just use if constexpr here to write this in one overload and simplify the logic so that you don't have to think about The overloading here, you can just sort of follow the control flow. If it's this type of iterator, you do this. If it's this type of iterator, you do this, et cetera, et cetera.
Sorry,
yep. It's a little hard to see back there. Gotcha. Sorry. Yeah, I will do my best on that. Unfortunately, this I had not checked how it was going to show up on the screen. My apologies. Is there any way we can kill the lights? Okay, that would be great. Yeah. Yep. They're on the first slide, had the link. I can go pull that up. Hang on. Okay, the link's right there. I think that one's a different shade of blue. So I'll leave that up for a moment, let you guys grab that.
If I can get them to either dim or turn off the lights, just dimmer would be good.
Okay. That would be awesome. If they can just turn them off, that would be great. All right, sorry about that, guys. So we definitely have plenty of time, so I can wait a couple minutes to see if they can shut off the lights before moving on, or I can just keep going. Sort of up to you guys. Keep going, you want? Okay. Let's see where we were. It's getting there. Okay. All right, so just refresher for where we were. We're talking about if-const expert. So we just did this example with advance, showing how we could replace tag dispatching with if-const expert. So let's say that I have some sort of like person struct like this, where I've got three data members, and then I've got three getter functions. And suppose I wanted to implement a global get function to sort of non-intrusively make this struct destructurable so that it would work with structured bindings. So in C++11, I could do this. Is this better color-wise? Okay, awesome. In C++11, I could do this by having, you know, this is my what my get function's signature is going to be. I declare it here, and then I could explicitly specialize it for the three cases. C++17 with if-const expert, we can just write this once here. You'll notice that there's no static assert or sphene to check for the out of bounds case where I is greater than 2, and that's because in that case, a return type of void will be deduced here, and a void ampersand, so returning a void reference, is going to be an error because it'll try to instantiate void, and so that would not compile. And so that sort of sphenes it out. All right, next, yep. Yes. I believe so. Yeah. So next up, we're going to talk about fold expressions. So in C++11, if we wanted to write a variadic function like this, like this auto sum here, so it takes a bunch of arguments and then it adds all of them together. We might write it like this, where we're going to have a number of overloads, we're going to have sort of some base cases, and then we're going to have a recursive case here. In C++17, we can write this in just one case using what's called a fold expression, so it's a new way of working with parameter packs. So I've got here this in parentheses, ns plus dot 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 plus 0, close parentheses. So fold expressions apply binary operators to parameter packs. There are four types of fold expressions. They differ in the order of application and whether they take an explicit initial value. So an ernary right fold does not take an initial value, and it applies from the right, so it would expand out to this. Left fold would apply from the opposite direction, and then the binary fold, the same thing, except they take an initial value, which is folded, which is the what's given if the parameter pack is empty. So all binary operators are foldable. So this is the list of all the binary operators in C++. So for this sum that I showed you guys before, where we what we have here is a binary right fold. So again, parentheses ns plus dot 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 plus zero, close parentheses. And what this would expand to if I gave it four arguments is it would be 3.14 plus 1e7 plus 42, negative 42 plus 17 plus zero here, which is this is the initial value. And if I gave it just nothing, it would just return zero, because that's the initial value. So a Boolean AND function would be a good example of a unary left fold. So this is going to fold over the Boolean AND operator. So it would just look like this, just dot, 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 ampersand, ampersand, and then the parameter pack. And so like if I gave it four arguments here, it would expand out to this. So if I call it with no arguments here, what does it expand out to? Well, for these three operators, if the parameter pack is empty, they have sort of special semantics. If the parameter pack is empty, then the value of the fold is for Boolean AND true, for Boolean OR false, and for the comma operator, sort of void default construction expression. And for any of the operators not listed above, an unary fold expression with an empty parameter pack is ill-formed. So you can do some, here's another little neat one. This is a variadic print function here. It's a binary left fold over the left shift operator with an initial value of std c out. So the initial value is right here, std c out. Then the operator's right here, dot, dot, dot. The operator again, and then the parameter, or the expression that gives us a parameter pack here. And then this is not part of the fold right here. And so this for each arg here, so this takes a function and then a parameter pack of arguments and calls the function once on each argument. And this is a unary right fold over the comma operator, and it takes advantage of this. It takes advantage of that last special case right here. Yep.
Actually, two questions. On the sum example, zero is optional, correct?
Zero is not optional because we're summing over the plus operator. And the special cases here, so you need to provide the initial value for operators that are not covered in the special cases here, or if the default initial value in these special cases doesn't work for the types that you're dealing with here.
And the second question for the print example.
Yep.
Does it print all log values and then end the line, or it prints values then end the line for each?
That's a good question. So the fold expression here, which is in parentheses, so this is completely separate from the new line. So it's going to print all of these arguments and then one new line, not one of these arguments new line, one of these arguments new line. If you put the new line, let's see, where do you have to put it? Yeah, I think, yes, that would do it, yeah. If you put it inside of the parentheses here, then you'd get argument new line, argument new line, argument new line.
Oh, no.
Nope.
No.
Ah, right.
You need extra tricks.
Yeah. It's yeah. That would not compile because then the result of that expression would not be Yes, Nika's right. Yeah, you'd have to do some other tricks to get that. Any other questions? Okay. Sorry, a little bit louder.
Folding and, or, do they short circuit?
Yes, the question was, do the folding and, or, short circuit? And yes, they do. Okay, next up, before C++ 17, we've had function template deduction to simplify the usage of function templates by allowing programmers to omit explicit template parameters when they can be deduced from the function's arguments. So like we have this std make tuple function, which takes advantage of function template deduction to allow you to create a tuple where you don't need to explicitly say, hey, it's a tuple of int and double. It's just deduced from the arguments to the function. This is not, we've not had this sort of deduction for class templates until C++ 17. So now you can just write std tuple without any template parameters, and then these constructor arguments here, and then the types will be deduced from the constructor arguments. They can also be deduced in new expressions, so it's probably pretty silly to new a tuple, but it would if you do new std tuple and 0, 0 here, you'll get a tuple of int int.
Any partial specialized type?
No, you cannot partially specialize. Class template deduction, I think, simplifies a lot of common patterns from modern C++, like resource acquisition is initialization. So for mutexes, you can just write std lockguard. You don't have to specify the mutex type. That's kind of nice. So the class templates parameters can now be deduced in declarations, function style cast expressions, and new expressions. And they're only performed if no template arguments are provided, and there's no partial specialization. You can't provide one of them, like right here. That's not allowed. There's also a sort of related feature called deduction guides. Because class template deduction doesn't always work as you may wish, so this facility lets you control how class template deduction operates. Now, these deduction guides don't have to be templates, and I'll show you guys an example of this. They are not defined inside of a class. They're defined after the class definition. And they have to be within the same scope as the class template. So these are sort of best understood through examples, I think. So like this deduction guide is in the standard library. So what this, again, the syntax is right here. So it's template name, so vector, and then the parameters here, and then a right arrow in the type that this constructor should deduce to. So this is for vector's constructor that takes two different iterators. If we didn't have this deduction guide, it would try to deduce this as a vector of iterators, and it wouldn't know how to figure out what the value type is of the iterator. So what this guide says is, hey, if you've been given two iterators here, this is how you go and find the correct value type from an iterator. And so for the vector's constructor that takes two iterators, this one here would go and use a deduction guide, whereas doing a vector from a initializer list would just use automatic deduction. So as I said, they don't need to be templates. So if I have this like template T here, struct name, it's got a constructor that takes a first and a last here. I could have, there should be two character const stars there. I could have this deduction guide, which is not a template, which would point expression like this to this constructor. Sorry, there should be a second char const star there. Okay. Any questions on this one? Deduction guides are sort of a more advanced feature. They're a little bit. There's a number of caveats here in how they work. That is the sort of suggested usage, yes. The question was, are deduction guides for the class author or the class user? And the answer is they should be used for the class author, but there's nothing that necessarily stops the class user from using them.
They have to be defined in the same scope.
Yes. Right, but I could go and add this. If this deduction guide wasn't in the standard, I could go and add it. The question was these to be put into the same scope as the class. So doesn't that prohibit users from extending third-party classes? I don't think it necessarily does. It is if you want to go and do ugly hacks, you could abuse this feature. So next up, I want to talk about this feature, auto non-type template parameters. So, that's going too far. No, that was correct. So std integer constant is one of the fundamental metaprogramming primitives. We use it to express compile time values, something like this, struct const, where it takes two template parameters. The first one is a type template parameter, and the second one is a non-type template parameter of that type. And then it just has a static const expert data member that has that value. So like you could use this to express a compile time integer or compile time character, et cetera. So in C++ 17, instead of having to have two parameters and explicitly provide the type of this non-type template parameter, we can write template auto and just provide the literal argument, like literal integer here, or a character, or a boolean, or in this case here, like a function pointer, and it will deduce the type. So this is pretty nice because it simplifies expressing compile time constants. You don't have to write things twice. It's somewhat similar to some of the other deduction features I just talked about. So this is also known by some people as template auto. It uses the regular auto deduction rules, so you can sort of constrain it in the same ways that you can constrain auto in any other place. So one thing this is useful for is that previously non-type parameter packs had to be homogeneous. Like you could have this struct sequence where you say I want a list of compile time integers or a list of compile time characters, but you couldn't say like I want like a compile time tuple. And now in C++ 17 you can have something like that by doing template auto dot dot dot. So like right here, this would be my tuple where I've got an integer literal, a character literal, and a boolean literal. And then when you're dealing with these types, you can use decal type to figure out which type each element is. So one place where this is useful, some of you may be familiar with span from the guideline support library. It's a non-owning view of a contiguous sequence of objects. So like a pointer plus a size conceptually. The number of elements in the sequence can either be provided at compile time by just specifying a literal, or at runtime by specifying as a template parameter this sort of magic value dyne, which in the sort of C++ 11 to 14 era span would just be a const expert global variable that has some magic value that's of type std size t, but is some value that presumably nobody would ever provide, like -1. And in C++ 17, instead of having this magic value that's actually a std size t, we can create just some trivial type here and use it as a tag type and use template auto instead of std size t as the second parameter here. And then in this second case, when we provide dyne here, we can use decal type inside of span to distinguish between this tag type that indicates something in this case that this the length of the span will be provided at runtime via constructor that to span, or that it's a std size t a compile time literal. Speaking of tag types, C++ 17 addresses one of the major pain points for metaprogramming. C++ 17 introduces inline variables. So now I can mark this this global const expert, or this global variable as inline, and it's actually implicit for const expert data members, but it is required here. And then I can use this library in multiple translation units without having to deal with the ODR violations. So variables can now be inline just like functions. They may be defined in more than one translation unit as long as the definitions are identical. The definitions must be present in a translation unit that accesses the inline variable. And these inline variables have external linkage, so they're not static. And they must be declared inline in every translation unit, and they have the same address in every translation unit. And a static const expert member variable is implicitly inline. So like this is quite nice. So, like before, if I wanted to have some global atomic bool as a flag to indicate that something's ready within some toy project I'm working on, I would need to have it in the header and have it extern and then in the source file initialize it. But now you can just write inline std atomic bool ready and initialize it and put that all in the header, and that's fine. It can be used for multiple translation units. And also, we could stick this inside of a struct and make it static, and it would still be fine. Just mark it inline. Oh, that was the last one there. All right, next up, I'm going to talk about two different features relating to using lambdas in const expert contexts. So before C++ 17, it's been a little difficult to use lambdas in const expert context. So like, if I just write a lambda like this add lambda here, and I try to call it in this const expert expression here to construct this int I, I'll get a compile error because the call operator of the synthesized lambda is not const expert. In C++ 17, we don't have this restriction. There's now a syntax where you can indicate that the lambda should be const expert, but it's actually been made implicit. So you can write this now, but you don't need to. This will just work out of the box. And the reason here is that the compiler can just figure it out because it has the definition available because the lambda is written right where it's used. It's never going to be forward declared and then used somewhere else. It's always going to be visible. How would you declare a lambda const expert? Yes. You would get an error if you write this. And it's not actually const expert, you would get an error. If you did something that's not legal in a const expert context and inside this lambda, you would get an error. Whereas if you wrote this and you did something in here that you couldn't do in const expert, you would only get an error here when you tried to use it in a const expert context. Yes?
What is the type of the lambda itself when you mark a const expert? Does it change the actual functionality?
The question is, does it change the actual function object? Can you clarify in what way?
The object has a callable operator, and does it just make the call operator itself a const expert function?
Yes. So it does is that the synthesized call operator of the lambda is now synthesized as if it was marked const expert, as if you wrote a function object with a const expert call operator. You can also create const expert lambdas. So here, this is a lambda with a const expert call operator. But this is a const expert lambda. The distinction here is that this lambda, you can call it, its call operator is marked const expert, but its copy constructor is not, its constructors are not. Whereas this one does have a const expert constructor and copy constructor. And this is, of course, relevant if you have captures and your constructors and copy constructors and assignment operators are not trivial. So Louis Dion has an interesting use case for this, which is that he can use it as a way to implement an efficient tuple where sort of you do it recursively and use captures. He gave a talk at C++ Now, I believe, C++ Now 2014, about how to do this. So before C++17, static assert required you to give it two arguments, the first the expression, and then the second a failure message, unlike assert, which just requires one. So a lot of people like me got into the habit of often writing in static assert, something like isAddable, VT, and then just an empty string, because we didn't want to think up a particular assertion message. We just wanted to get the assert fired if we made a mistake, and that it wasn't really something we were using, that we were expecting users to run into. It was just something internal. We didn't really want to provide a message. So now static assert has two forms. It can either take a message or it cannot take a message. So this is a small feature, but it means you don't have to explain to your coworkers why you've written this. So also in C++ 17, return value optimization, which is performed by every C++ compiler, more or less, wasn't required before 17, and now it is required. So prior to C++ 17, you could not write something like this grab lock function here, where it just takes a new text and then it constructs this temporary lock guard and returns it. The reason you couldn't write this is because even though it's very clearly going to be RVO'd, you'd get a compile error because the copy or move constructor would be required and lock guard has neither. So in C++ 17, RVO is now guaranteed, so the compiler does not enforce that you have these constructors that would never be needed. So this is nice for writing this sort of factory function where you have a type that is not copy or move constructible. But it's somewhat of a small feature. Now, one thing to note is that only RVO is mandatory, NRVO, so named return value optimization, is not. So it's only this case, not the case where it's a named variable, like if it was one of the arguments here that you were going to return. Anything that's NRVO is not guaranteed and would still have these requirements. All right. So this is we've got one or two more, so we'll probably break a little bit early. In C++ 17, you can now declare nested namespaces. So instead of doing namespace A, B, C, you can just do namespace A, colon, colon, B, colon, colon, C. So again, this is just a little syntax hack. And then we've got this new preprocessor predicate called underscore underscore has include. And this can be used to test if a header include exists. So like right here, I'm doing pound if has include. So if I have a string view available, then go ahead and include it. And otherwise, if I have experimental string view available, include it. And otherwise, just define this have string view to zero here. And so what this does is just like this, it searches the header, it searches for the header but does not actually include it into the file, so it allows you to test for whether a header exists. Pretty straightforward. Okay, so yep.
String view, but I'm compiling the C++ 14 or something.
So the question was, how does this work with different versions of C++? The example you gave was that if I was compiling, trying to use string view, but using C++ 14, this is a good question. I'm not certain whether this is something that would be backported to compilers. I mean, obviously, if you're using a compiler that's older than this feature, it probably is not going to be around. The question was if C++ 20 introduced a header and but that was not in C++ 17, would this feature find it?
When compiling with
C++ 17. I suspect that's probably, I'm not sure I have an answer for that. Let me get back to you after the break. I'd have to look that up. I'm not sure.
I think it just finds it.
My guess is that it's probably implementation defined, or
what do you want me to take?
Yeah.
Just follow up. Can I just say if dev, because it's going to have a loop, do this?
You can't say if dev because this is not this has include is not a preprocessor definition. It's like this preprocessor. It's a preprocessor predicate. So it needs to be pound if, not if def.
Right?
Yeah.
So the CPP reference page for as include actually says that it only checks whether you can include a file.
Right, okay. So Mihao pointed out it, so CPP reference indicates it only checks whether you can include a file, so like whether the file is there.
So you will get an error if you include, for example, optional from C++ 11, even though
So I think part of the answer here is that the standard does not really have a notion of different versions of the standard. There's just sort of the latest standard. And I'm not certain whether a modern compiler with a std C++ 11 flag would make this feature available in that mode, because it's not a part of C++ 11. So you might just get a compile error because it doesn't know what has include is. All right, so that was the last of the language features. We've got 10 minutes until break. I think we'll wait until, we'll start on the library features after break. If anybody has any questions, yep.
So the has include is not checking if this file has already been included in this compile module.
No, it is.
It
is, yes, it is testing for whether you can include the header. Any other questions on this first half of the talk? Yep.
Is there a way to test if a function is present, like a symbol or something?
The question was, are there other forms of this to test for functions or symbols or? Not right now, no. No, it's just this one particular one has include. And you wouldn't be able to do that in the preprocessor anyways, because that would involve parsing. All right, I will see y'all after break.